This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a special episode of The Film Pastor. I am your host, Laverne, and as a podcaster myself, I am very fortunate and glad to be part of the large association of movie blogs, where you can find this show and many others on their podcasting network page. Every few weeks or so, I'm going to highlight at least five different shows that you should check out. Think of The Soup, but instead of showing clips of talk shows, we are presenting sections from a few podcasts. Let's get things started with our first section. This is from FilmWise. Host Bubba Wheat always has the guest come on to a show where they discuss a movie that he's never seen before, and then in turn, the guest will discuss a superhero movie that they've never seen before. Well, Bubba Wheat has a new show titled FilmWise Extra, where he focuses on a movie that didn't get a lot of love when it was first released, but he feels that you should give the movie another shot. And the first episode of this new series, he's tackling Ang Lee's Hulk, and he brought along a lot of great guests to go ahead and talk about that movie. So let's listen now.
The most notable visual style that Ang Lee brought into his film was the inclusion of split screens that mimicked comic book panels during several moments in the film. Ang Lee had this to say about the process to Film Monthly's Paul Fisher. "It's all in the editing room. I start out wanting to do it. This is one of the reasons I found an excuse to do something I always wanted to do. Why do we always line them up in a linear way? Why can't we do, like, martial arts choreography? Choreograph images, having images like a comic book, when you open a page, go to the most prominent design structure, and it has a cause, your eyes go different places, they pick and choose, back and forth, and it was, how can we do that in a movie, to a certain extent?"
The one thing that really stuck out to me that I'd forgotten exactly how much happened is the visual style of it.
He had a very specific visual style for Crouching Tiger. And I think I remember reading some interviews or something at the time about how he was trying to do it. He was trying to direct it like a comic book. And I remember he had the cut shots and the pans and things like that, where he did different panels, you know, within the film, which I thought at the time was brilliant, and I still think it is. I actually really enjoyed it this time around. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I enjoyed it the first time around too, but I really appreciate it this time because it was something very different. And it wasn't as cookie cutter as what you get for a lot of movies these days, especially superhero movies.
I remember liking it at the time because I felt like it was kind of a nice touch and a unique look to comic book movies that a lot of other comic book movies didn't really do.
I came away thinking, they actually made it look like a comic book.
I love the visuals. I love the vibe. At the time, the movie got a ton of criticism for the special effects of the Hulk, for it not looking real. And I think it was wrong and undeserved. I think that the animation and the CGI looks great. If anything, I think if they had taken the characters to sort of a dinosaur green or a gray instead of a bright lime green, I think that the complaints about how that looked would have vanished.
There was a lot of bright primary colors. I remember when they went into the military facility after they captured him, and you see all the pipes and the metal and everything around the facility, and it's, these bright, like, red and blue and yellow, and it's just really pops out, like, and especially like I was watching a high definition version, and the colors just popped, and you don't even in today's movies, like, a lot of times they're very color washed.
I went to a comic book film and I saw something comic booky. I'm on board with this.
You can listen to the rest of this episode by visiting FlightsTightsAndMovieNights.com and search for FilmWise. On The Lair of the Unwanted, hosts Jason Soto and Olan usually tackle a particular B-movie or cult film, but for this episode, they decided to come clean and ask a few people what their thoughts on Prince are. On the full episode, they talk in more detail about his one movie that didn't get as much love as Purple Rain, Under the Cherry Moon. So be sure to check out that episode and many more on their website, lairoftheunwanted.com.
Let us come clean, shall we, Nolan?
I think we shall. It is time once again to come clean with the Foxy Goat Goat Soap. If you smell like a fisherman's boat, then take a bath, damn it, and wash yourself clean with the cool, quality, creamy goodness of Foxy Goat Goat Soap, made of 100% New Hampshirean goat milk and other ingredients that makes it soap, I'm sure. It's not just like a giant slab of goat milk. That'd be weird.
Yeah.
So there it is. You can check all that out at www.thefoxygoat.com.
Absolutely. So today's episode, we are paying tribute to Prince. And so I decided to ask the Facebook and Twitter, tell us something related to Prince, whether it be your favorite song, favorite videos, if you saw him in concert, or even if somehow you got a chance to meet him. And I actually just spanned across like four different posts because for some reason people seem to be tight-lipped about Prince all of a sudden. Like, we had a whole slew of Prince stuff like the first week, and then suddenly it was like, nope, no more. So I had to keep like goading people into telling us stuff, and I finally got a few responses. And yes, actually, the first few were actually friends of mine.
Yeah, I was gonna say we've got a few responses on the Facebook page. Starting off, GW Snazzy, who I know is a friend of yours.
I think you said all that way.
What?
You got that way wrong, but my friend Bill. It's my friend Bill. He's my friend from back home, and we've done some YouTube videos together and stuff like that. He's a good friend of mine.
Yes. So he writes in.
Yes.
And says, "I saw him in concert in 2004 with my mom, Aunt Jackie, and our friend Sess. They gave out his new album, Musicology, for free. It was awesome. They had a drink called Purple Rain."
Yes.
And then he elaborates. "He did some songs acoustic for a while in a chair, and he was wearing high heels."
That sounds about right.
Yep. And, I think the high heels is almost a given, really. Oh,
yeah, almost every time he was on camera, he was wearing high heels.
Yes.
But it just made sense. And the next one's my friend April.
Okay, April writes in, and she writes in with a memory.
Yes.
"Seventh grade, Purple Rain just came out. Choir teacher called away. Someone popped soundtrack and tape player cue to Darling Nikki. Three girls, self included, stand at teacher's desk and lip sync, none knowing what half the words mean."
Now, to anyone who's familiar with the song Darling Nikki, that's a really funny story. If you don't know the song Darling Licky, you should go look up the lyrics to that, and then you'll find out why that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Oh, and hey, the Vern wrote in.
Yeah, the Vern. Friend of the show, has been on a number of times. He writes in and says, "That bat dance video from Prince is also pretty cool. It has, like, tons of hot blondes in it. My favorite is the one who wears a shirt that says, 'All this and brains, too.'" Very cool. Thank you all for your Prince memories. Did we have anything on the Twitter?
Yeah, I got a couple more, actually.
Cool.
The Vern actually finished up on that thought on Twitter. So he spanned two different social media channels here. That's awesome. He also says, "One of my good friends works with a lady who helped design the Prince symbol."
That's cool.
That's awesome. See, that's the kind of stuff I was looking for.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. And it makes sense because, I don't know if anyone knows this, but I think he made this public knowledge, so this ain't nothing mind-blowing. He, the Verne lives in Minneapolis, which is where Prince lives, so that's not, you know, that's cool, you know, that's amazing, that's fucking awesome, I'll be bragging about that left and right, but, you know, that makes sense, you know, at the same time, like, well, yeah, y'all live in the same city, so that's cool. And one more on Twitter, comes from our friend, Steve Honeywell, from 1001plus.blogspot.com. He was just on the show last episode. And he says, and I want to say this, he linked to a video, which of course I can't do anything about that here, but he says, absolutely and without question, the Animaniacs joke. Now, Nolan, I don't know if you know what the Animaniacs joke is.
I've seen some episodes of the Animaniacs in my day. I don't know about a specific joke, but
okay. Well, I will elaborate, and then for people who don't know, they can look up the video on YouTube. But basically, as Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, they're on a boat, and they're looking around somewhere, and one of them, I think it was Yakko, he says, okay, we need to look for Prince. And so then Dot's holding Prince, like the singer, the guy we're talking about today, in her hands. And she's like, I found Prince. And then Yakko goes, no, fingerprints. And then the animated Prince makes like a sly smile and starts wiggling his eyes. And then she goes, no, I don't think so. This is a kid's show, ladies and gentlemen. This was on a kid's show back in the 90s.
No, I totally believe that's a total Animaniacs type of thing, yes, to throw in there. But
I remember when that first aired, too, and I was like, did they really just do that? Holy shit. That's awesome. So, all right, I'd like to thank everybody for coming clean on that. That was some great stories, memories, whatever. So it is time for us to come clean. I have a list, so I don't know if you want to go first, Nolan.
I might as well go first because I do not have a list, and mine is really more Prince adjacent than really about Prince himself. Despite the fact that my formative years were in the 80s, not a huge Prince fan. Like I knew all his songs, obviously, because he had a huge string of hits and was familiar with them and liked them. And that was it. So, you know, there's that. I do have this one thing that happened, and this what I thought was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I think I've mentioned this on the show. I know I've talked to you about it. When I was younger, I spent a year in Japan teaching English.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I was there New Year's Eve 1998.
Okay.
I'm farting around because I've got the New Year's is a big deal in Japan. That's the big deal holiday. Okay. You're there, right? Mm-hmm. So I've got the day off, and we're going out. We're going to have a big party and go out all night that night. And but during that day, I'm in Shibuya, which is the same district when we watched Gamera 3 and that got trashed.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm there, like, and I'm farting around, and I'm going through some like music store, just browsing, and I find a CD of the Mike Flowers Pops. Now I don't know if you're familiar with the Mike Flowers Pops. Probably not. They're like a lounge act that they do covers of like recent songs, but in total like ridiculous campy lounge style. They actually in the 90s they had a big hit. They did a cover of Wonderwall maybe 5 months after Oasis released Wonderwall. Okay. So it was like, it's the type of thing where just as Wonderwall was coming down, back down the charts, theirs went up the charts in the UK. So like this totally lounge version of, and it's fantastic. It's so schmaltzy. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
So you can check it out like during the break here.
Okay.
I find the album for the Mike Flowers pops, and I'm like, holy crap, this is fantastic. One of the songs on there, 1999. And I'm like, holy shit, I am buying this immediately. And we listened to Mike Flowers Pop's cover of 1999. I would send you the link to that. Unfortunately, that's can't find that on YouTube. But and as our build up to partying like it was 1999, which at midnight it was.
Okay, that's great. That's an awesome
story. So I think that, I like that. That counts. That counts. No, right?
Totally. I got your back, man. I got your back. That was cool. I like that. That was funny.
So let's hear your list.
All right. So, unfortunately, I never got to see him in concert. I didn't get to meet him or anything. But I do know a lot of his songs, and I do like a lot of his songs. So I'm just going to give you my top six favorite Prince songs. These are really in no order, because if I had to rank these, I don't know how I would do it. These are just the first six songs I thought of that I really, really, really enjoy. They're super mainstream, but fuck it, it's my list. You do whatever you want to do. first off, actually, you just mentioned it, 1999. Might have been actually the first Prince song I heard when I was a kid. I'm trying to remember. It was either that or Purple Rain. Because I actually watched Purple Rain when it came out on cable. But I can't remember the order of things right now. But anyway, 1999, I dig that song. And I remember when New Year's Eve 1999 hit, that song and R.E.M.'s It's the End of the World as We Know It was like playing in rotation everywhere. and my second one, I fucking love When Doves Cry. Like, that's like my jam. Like, that song,
it's a great song.
That song comes on the radio, I like crank that fucker up and I'm just like singing along to it. And it's, I love that song. Third one, from Purple Rain, Let's Go Crazy. Really dig that song too. When that one comes on, I dig it. From this movie, actually, the movie we're doing tonight, Kiss. Song mm-hmm. Kiss. It's great. Okay, so if you go to our Facebook page, or if you've been to our Facebook page, I posted a picture of Prince looking, it's called the Prince Side Eye. If you Google that, you'll see this picture. That moment is from the video for Kiss, and it is, like, the greatest moment in that in that video. It's awesome. Number five, Little Red Corvette.
Awesome song.
That's a great song. I like that one. And the last one I'm going to mention here is I Would Die For You.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was going to show up.
The day that Prince died, and this is going to show you how influential Prince was. The day Prince died, MTV and VH1 actually played music videos. It was for a day, but they actually went back and played music videos, and they were playing all, like, every Prince music video that they had in their library. And they played a live version of I Would Die For You. I don't know if this is on YouTube. I never really looked for it. But if you can go watch the live version of I Would Die For You, it is, like, the greatest live performance of, like, any song ever, because he gives his all. Like, he goes 120% during the song. Like, he's dancing up a storm, he's taking clothes off, he's running around, he's playing, like, guitar and piano and keyboards, like, all at once at one point, I think. Like, that's just how amazing he was. And they played this, like, on heavy rotation that day. Like, I've seen it, like, a few times, and it was just, like, a wonder to see. It was awesome. So I don't know if it's on YouTube or not. I know his live stuff is on YouTube. It might be on there, but definitely check it out. I think it's great. And if I can give an honorable mention, another video you need to watch. It's not a Prince song, but he performed on it, and the video for it is fucking amazing. When they were introducing George Harrison into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2004. Prince, Tom Petty, Steve Winwood, Jeff Lynne, and like a few other people, like George Harrison's son and a few other people, all got on stage and they did a cover of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And by that, that's a great song too. And the cover they did is amazing. There's a moment at the end of that video that is so fucking awesome. Is they show Prince playing guitar and the song comes to an end. And he throws his guitar straight up in the air, and he walks away, and you never see the guitar come back down. Like, it just, like, disappeared into thin air. Like, if you watch the video, watch it all the way to the end, he just throws it, and he walks off stage, and then, like, where'd it go? Like, what the fuck? So check that out, too.
You know, for half a second, I thought the video you were going to cite was Talking Heads' Wildlife video, where I don't know how familiar you are with that song, but it's a Talking Heads song.
Yeah,
and it's the video has like a whole bunch of, it's like at like some kind of like talent show or like some weird kind of talent show or karaoke where different people are coming on stage. A very young John Goodman's one of them.
Okay,
but there's this one. Suddenly the song breaks into this very Prince-esque moment and this Prince-esque character comes on. I thought you were going to tell me that that was actually Prince who did it.
Oh, no.
Like, what?
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with that, but no.
That's also worth you checking out.
Yeah, so check those out. Just go look for those on YouTube and enjoy it. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Prince's second movie, which didn't do as good as Purple Rain did, but we're the kind of show that has to dive into the crap, so that's what we're going to do. So we're going to cover Prince's Under the Cherry Moon. Stay tuned.
On this week's Random Chat Show, hosts David, Kim, and Melissa talk about the 1995 anime classic Ghost in the Shell, and then discuss the controversial casting of Scarlett Johansson in the remake. But before they do that, Kim challenges them to a fun game where they can prove who knows more about animated sci-fi films. Check it out.
And that means it's time for the Awesome to the Max Movie Trivia Challenge.
So today, we're doing a trivia on sci-fi animation.
Oh, done. I'm done.
All right. You don't like animation.
Okay, I'm going to do my very best. I know a lot about sci-fi. I know a lot about animation, but I don't know if I know a lot about the two as a unit.
I know that you know, you both know all the movies on this list because you've all talked about it.
Okay, well, that's
maybe encouraging. Except one.
Right.
But I'm confident that you should know everything.
Okay, can I clarify? Animation means they are animated films, right?
Animated films.
Okay, okay. All right, okay, let's do this.
Number one. In the distant future, a small waste-collecting robot inadvertently embarks on a space journey that will ultimately decide the fate of mankind.
Wall-E. Got it. I'm first.
No. I think there's
Kim,
a delay.
Kim, call it.
I think
it.
There's a delay on your microphone because I
had Wall-E before you even...
There's a host advantage right now.
If anything, okay. That's a tie, because that's my favorite movie, and I cry like a baby every time I watch it.
It's just too bad you were a half second late.
I was not! There's a delay on your appearance for audio.
I don't want to side with David, but you were. Okay, second one. A secret military project endangers Neo-Tokyo when it turns a biker gang member into a rampaging psychic psychopath.
What? A biker gang into one biker guy?
Yeah, a biker gang member into a rampaging psychic psychopath that only two kids and a group of psychics can stop.
Frickin' doodle? What are you talking about here?
No clue. I probably know it, but I can't.
It's a pretty popular Japanese anime.
Akira!
Yeah.
Ah, Akira, right.
Oh, that was such a guess. I've never even seen it. It's on my to-watch list, though.
The next one. The special bond that develops between a robot and a prodigy who team up with a group of friends to form a band of high-tech heroes.
Big Hero 6.
Yes, Big Hero 6.
All right.
Next one. A high school girl acquires the power to travel back in time and decides to use it for her own personal benefits.
This is so freaking hard.
Yeah, this is really hard.
I was going to say Inuyasha because she travels back 500 right. years, but it's not for her own benefit.
I believe you've talked about it, so I think you actually know this one.
Okay. Travels high back. School girl. Sailor Moon! She doesn't travel in time. All I can think of when you say high school girl is like the typical high school anime girl in like her little sailor suit.
Okay, well, the answer is the girl who leapt through time.
Ah, didn't sugar. See that one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even thought of that. Okay, now I know.
Okay. Next one. A futuristic twist on a classic tale. We follow a restless teen on a fantastic journey across the universe as cabin boy aboard a majestic space galleon.
Travis wow. Lynn.
Yes.
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
The wording is so weird. I'm like, what are we talking
Trust
about?
Trust me, IMDb did not have a better one. Yeah. And I tried to like combine different versions together.
Oh, God.
So two guesses get you points. Great.
Oh, gosh. I'm just the best guesser.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one you both should know. Okay.
I'm ready.
When a machine that allows therapists to enter their patients' dreams is stolen, all hell breaks loose. Only a young female therapist can stop it.
Paprika.
Yeah.
Yeah. Favorite one ever of all time.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
You'd okay. love it. Oh, really? You should.
You got to see it, Mel. It's fantastic. You'd love it.
All right. I'll watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Warrior and pacifist desperately struggles to prevent two warring nations from destroying themselves and their dying planet.
Okay. Repeat one more time.
A warrior and pacifist desperately struggles to prevent two warring nations from destroying themselves and their dying planet.
Yeah, Avatar?
No, it's avant-garde,
Evangelion?
No,
Not that one.
Oh.
No. Melissa's going to be so disappointed that she doesn't know
it. One more hint.
One more hint. It's also a Japanese anime. I tell you more.
Like, duh.
By our favorite studio.
Studio Ghibli? Mm-hmm. Laputa? Castle in the Sky? Nausicaa.
Yeah.
Nausicaa.
I don't think we should count it at this Nausicaa. Point. You guessed like 5 times.
Wait, Nausicaa. did she get that what? Point?
Hang on, nope, Nausicaa, no. A pacifist and a warrior? Who what? Oh, she's one person.
Yeah, she's one person, right.
Oh my god, I'm thinking two people. A warrior person.
Thank
and
you
a
for playing, Mel.
I'm so upset. That's my favorite Ghibli movie. I'm really so upset right now.
Okay, next one. A young boy befriends a robot from outer space that a paranoid government agent wants to destroy.
The Iron Giant.
Yes, got it.
I'm like losing. Actually, maybe not. I guessed a couple.
I don't think you're losing.
It's tied. Right now it's tied. 3-3.
Sure.
Okay, next one. A young man learns that he has to find a hidden Earth ship before an enemy alien species does, in order to secure the survival of humanity.
Titan A.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell? I'm really bad at this one. I'm drawing so many blanks, and I like these movies.
In the next one, the last one now, okay?
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
A futuristic city sharply divided between the working class and the city planners The son of a city's mastermind falls in love with a working class prophet who predicts the coming of a savior to mediate their differences.
Metropolis.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
Oh, yep. God.
Bang! Please hand over the crown. It's 5-3.
Oh, God.
I am so disappointed in myself.
Well, at least from this, now I know I have to watch Paprika.
Yeah, you are going to love that movie, Mel. It's amazing. 100% right. Amazing, yeah. Well, nice game, Kim, and it leads up to this week's movie, Ghost in the Shell, which is really on the lips of everybody now as the remake is, well, not remake, but the reboot, I guess, the live action version is coming.
You can definitely check out that episode as well as others on the site, thatmomentin.com. Let's go ahead and just take a small break right now. We'll hear from some other podcast shows that you should definitely seek out, and we'll be right back.
All right, Kristen, I am so excited that you've decided to do a podcast with me, but what are we going to do a podcast about? There's so many other movie podcasts. We got to do something original.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Disney movies. What about something like that?
That's just kid stuff. What do we want to do that for?
Did you know that The Avengers is a Disney movie? Or that Pulp Fiction is a Disney movie?
Pulp Fiction is not a Disney movie.
It's technically owned by Miramax, which is part of Disney.
We are still going to talk about the Disney animated movies, though, right?
I thought you said that was kid stuff.
Well, you know, I've got two kids. I got to be a good dad and stuff.
So be sure to subscribe to the Walt Disney Podcast, where we discuss the various subsidiaries of the Walt Disney Studio, including the animated movies.
It's available on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts. And I swear, it's not kid stuff.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InSessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Yes, definitely check out those other shows because they're a lot of fun. Seek them out when you go to the LAMP site, which is largeassmovieblogs.com. Just look under the podcast tab and you'll see a thing that says Podcasted Network. So definitely check those shows out. Now, as you all may know, the LAMP cast itself is a great show where each week movie lovers get together and talk about what's going on in the world of film. On this latest episode, Todd of Forgotten Films and the Walt Disney Podcast, he won the movie of the month with his choice of Labyrinth. You know, it made sense. It's got puppets. He's a puppeteer. He's got Jennifer Connelly. He's a big lover of Jennifer Connelly. You got to listen to this great section where our host, Kristen Lopez, discusses the sexual awakening of young girls while watching this movie. Check it out.
You gotta talk about the gender dynamics in this movie.
Well, at some point. Be my guest. Go right ahead. Yeah.
Well, I mean, most females will say that if you have to have a patient zero for sexual awakening, it's Labyrinth, okay? Or if you're like me, it's like watching My Girl or Little Darlings or something like that. But this...
Okay.
Wait, what?
Just skip over that. Carry on.
Those are the trio of movies that made me who I am, okay? So don't judge. But But, I mean, when David Bowie makes his appearance in this movie in a big glitter shower with big 80s hair, and there's a lot of ball jokes that go on in this movie because he's got the little, the glass crystals with the hands. Those were not David Bowie's hands. He had some dudes standing behind him who did that.
That's disappointing. I was very impressed with him.
It makes me respect David Bowie more because those things are horrifying and they're like little signs of like, if you see someone playing with those, you know to avoid that person at all costs.
That's the kind of thing I've tried to do in the past.
They look like the death things in, if anybody's ever seen Phantasm. That's what they always reminded me of. But, I mean, it's, on first glance, you're like, wait, am I supposed to take this dude seriously? But it's the power of David Bowie because he makes you buy that character. And yeah. As a young girl, it's super intriguing. I mean, he's willing to give her whatever she wants. And he's willing to kidnap her little brother, which, again, as Jeanette mentioned, and I'm similar, as an elder sister of two younger brothers, I probably would have taken him up on that, at least for one of them, because, you know. But it's not until the dance sequence with the pants where you're like, wait, what? Because David Bowie had to know that those pants were ridiculously tight.
Well, he had to know.
He picked them. The camera
plays up to it all the time. Like, when Hoggle is, like, on his knees in front of him, the camera's just, like, crotch level. I mean, it's... you can't escape it, which, as I wrote in an essay for college, I was like, it's, you know, the overarching power of sexuality. The camera doesn't let the penis go away. It's in front of you everywhere. But yeah, as a young girl, you're like, wait, I don't know how I feel about this. But I kind of want to know more, okay? But it's the testament of Bowie as a persona and as an actor that it gets creepy, but like all good 70s and 80s movies were that dealt with this topic, it's just creepy enough, but we don't ever really cross a line where it gets like rapey, which right. I hate to say that as a feminist, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. I think that. And I've tried, is there any other actor you could think of playing Jareth? And I don't think anyone else could have pulled that off, because he shows up in that outfit, the initial outfit. He's got six amazing outfits in this movie. But that initial one, he shows up and looks completely at home in that, with the hair, with the colored extensions in there. And, like, you could see him just wandering around his house dressed that way. No other actor anywhere could be able to show up in that, carry it off with ease, and then have this added layer of charisma where, yes, you don't even, I didn't when I was younger, now I think about it, the age difference, where he's clearly, in some parts of the movie, slightly wooing Sarah. But you're right, Kristen, it never really came off as as creepy as it probably should have.
And that's where I think persona plays so much in this movie, is that David Bowie, as audiences knew him, was the whole, you know, the Ziggy Stardust, the alien, the otherworldly figure that we expected a little, like, weirdness from him. I think if you look at the other people that they were courting for the role at the time, which was Prince and Michael Jackson,
yep.
Like, the persona there would have never really worked because Bowie has that threshold where, again, it doesn't come off as creepy. It's anticipated because of the power, the cultivation of his persona that he created at the time.
Well, I was going to say, can't you just say that David Bowie is playing David Bowie?
Yes,
you could. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what it felt like. But can we all just be very grateful it wasn't Michael Jackson picked, because that would have led to some very unfortunate connotations
that's
later in life with him taking a baby.
And, yeah.
That's why we have the Wiz.
That's right. Yeah. And I think Prince would have been an interesting angle to go, but I don't think it would have been as powerful.
Definitely check out the rest of that episode and more by visiting the site largeassmovieblogs.com. Our last show comes courtesy of Exploding Helicopters, which you can find on iTunes and Podomatic just by searching Exploding Helicopters. On this show, hosts Will and guest Nick of French Toast Sunday talk about the movie Machete Kills and the use of older actors in action movies. They have some pretty good suggestions that you should definitely check out. Let's listen.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk about was Danny Trejo as an action movie hero. So we've got here a guy who's been in a million movies, suddenly thrust into a leading role at the ripe old age of 70. And we've seen a lot of older actors move into the action genre in recent years, people like Liam Neeson or people returning to the genre. So sort of grizzled old favorites like Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. And these type of movies have even sort of picked up a kind of subgenre name of their own. So sort of they're dubbed the Jerry Action genre. So I wondered what you thought about these old dudes kicking butt. You know, what is it, Nick, that you think people like so much about seeing these butt kicking pensioners?
I think it's just cool, because I'm a big fan of puns, so I'm loving Jerry Action. I think it comes down to nostalgia, because growing up, we've always seen, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone in, you know, Rambo or Terminator or Rocky, just these movies where they're just punching the hell out of people. They're not really acting, they're just kind of, you know, knocking heads. And they just continue to do that. And you're like, yeah, you know, growing up, he was doing this and he's, you know, the old man still got it kind of thing. But when it comes to Liam Neeson, it's just cool. I don't want to say to see that range because there's not much of a stretch when it comes to action films. But like, I can remember like when I watched Schindler's List and at the very end, you know, Liam Neeson's giving that big monologue and just, you know, I weep every time. It gets me every time. But then to see him kind of turning around and all of a sudden he's like, you know, throat punching dudes and firing guns. It's like, all right, Liam Neeson, you're a bit of a badass. Like there's an extra facet to who you are as a person and what you can do as an actor. And I really dig that.
Oh, definitely. I think when you get these older actors who are not previously associated with the action genre, so sort of Liam Neeson, I think, is the sort of classic example. I think he brings some serious acting chops with it, so it gives the characters that he's playing a little bit more gravitas than they might otherwise do if it was somebody who is much more familiar to audiences in that sort of genre. You know, I do think though the kind of the fact that the aging sort of heroes do make for slightly more interesting characters in these type of movies, because you know, I think that with their advancing years, they have an element of vulnerability about them. And I kind of think that for any sort of hero to work, they need that air of vulnerability. If they're invincible, what's the interest in watching somebody who can't be beaten, who's not going to be killed, take on a particular mission? If they've got some sort of flaw, whether it is, I don't know, if you're a superhero, whether it's kryptonite, or if you're just a sort of regular guy, but you're kind of getting on in years, like a la, I don't know, Charles Bronson in the 80s, then it adds an extra sort of element to it about, well, you know, have they got the kind of the physical resources to meet the challenge that they're being faced with?
Yeah, it allows you to relate to these characters a little bit better, because everybody has like, oh man, you know, I got that weird back thing, or oh, I got that thing with my knee, and you're able to go like, well, you know what, if they can do it, like maybe I could do it too. And there's also just this feeling that it's believable. Like, when you have these superheroes, like you said, you know, like Superman, you know, his big weakness is kryptonite. It doesn't exist. Like, that's not a real thing. So why should it matter to us? But if someone says, like, you know, better look out for bullets, you're right, because bullets can kill people. That's a real thing. That's going to hurt a lot of us. Or, hey, you know, be careful. Just little things like that. It adds to just this believability and this realism factor that I think is just becoming more and more prevalent. Don't get me wrong, I dig fantasy films from time to time, but just something that's realistic and something where someone can actually get hurt. And there's real stakes, because too many movies nowadays are like, oh, what's going to happen? But then it's always the lesser of the two things that could happen, and there's a happy ending. So to at least think that there's a greater vulnerability to this character, it's nice to have that idea, like, oh, maybe something bad's going to happen. You know, maybe, oh, man, he's going to pop his hip and he's going to have to be in a wheelchair the rest of the film and push him around that way. I would love to see that. Like Liam Neeson, you know, he gets kicked really hard in the leg and he's got a cast and he's just, you know, hobbling along with crutches. And he's got like a crutch gun or something he shoots people with. That's a movie, Crutch Gun. Oh, man. Crutch Gun starring Alan Alda. Could you imagine Alan Alda in a Taken style film? Oh.
I think, yeah. I mean, we haven't really pushed the boundaries yet of Jerry Action. So,
no, we haven't.
You know, like Liam Neeson, he's still, you know, he's a big guy. He's still in some sort of relative shape. But, you know, Alan Alda, you know, he's a guy, you know, couldn't be. Actually, you know what? I kind of assume he's got kind of like liberal values. He kind of looks like somebody who's nice to animals.
Oh, totally.
I don't think he's voting Trump anytime soon. Let's put it that way.
Oh, no. No, but he's driving, you know, maybe not a Prius, but like a Tesla, like an electric car. he's concerned about the environment. Like, he doesn't care who uses what bathrooms. He's probably like, oh, the gays want to marry? Let them marry. Who cares? But if someone steps, you know, kidnaps one of his grandchildren, you better look out.
Because the crotch gun's coming out.
Oh, man, we got to write this movie. Oh, I can just imagine it now. Like, he tries after the first time. They're like, yeah, whatever, old man. They push him. He trips and falls and just, you know, breaks his hip. And he just, he keeps going. He keeps, oh, I told you to stay down, old man. Like, just reuse all these tropes. It would be incredible.
Well, that's going to wrap up today's episode of The Film Pastor. I don't have a name for this clip show, so for now, I'm just going to be calling it Grazing with Podcasters. It's a working title, I know. If you have a better suggestion, please let us know on our Facebook page. Just search Film Pastor. You can also leave us a message on Twitter. We are at Film Pastor there. Again, all the shows that were on today's are part of the Lambs Podcasting Network page. If you want to be featured on that site, please visit largeassmovieblogs.com. Again, the shows that were featured today are Film Wise, Lair of the Unwanted, Random Chat Show, The Lambcast, and It's Blood and Helicopters. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.